Good morning to everybody. We're starting the class shortly, just a brief audio check. And once you hear the audio, please type audio okay at the bottom of your screen if you're joining us online. And we'll just wait about a minute or two for friends to join us on phone. And then we'll continue. We'll be reading from Koheles, chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. So just in a few moments. To take the few minutes we have right now, just look over again. That's Koheles, Ecclesiastes, verses 13 and 14 in chapter 4. Okay, and Laura, welcome to you. If everybody else is joining online, Tama, Yoshiyahu, Naomi, Elias, Avner, Avihu. All right, Avner, good to see you. Hope all is going well. Okay, Laura, thanks for the audio confirmation. We'll just start in a minute. And if you ever miss any of the classes or if you're coming late, the classes are recorded and posted on to the audio page. Type it here at the bottom of the screen. And that's where you could hear any of the previous classes. Good morning.
Good morning, Rabbi. How are you?
Good, Doug. How are you doing?
Doing okay.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
You know, does it matter that we been in the conference call thing? No? Cause I don't think I got a reminder for the thing.
Fine.
Maybe 10 more.
I usually have one or two extra.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it helps when you can, but it's not the end of the world if you don't.
What's that?
I'm sending in a confirmation just so we can estimate the number of lines we need for the call.
Right. Okay, so let's start. Okay, we're in Koheles. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, and we're up to verse 13. We're going to take up 13 and 14 today. And let me just ask Avner. Avner, since you're online, it looks like either Avihu or Elias is having a problem picking up the audio. So Avner, if you'd be so nice, just type on screen that they should either try Internet Explorer or Firefox. But I believe they need something called the Windows Media Player. So that's what's necessary for the class. typically Internet Explorer has that. So, Avner, if you can just write on screen that if anybody's having difficulty hearing the audio, they should switch browsers, but also make sure that they have Windows Media Player. Okay, thanks. Okay, so let's read the verses, and there's a lot here. So I'll, if you just indulge, I'm going to try to present it, and then we'll take up a number of points. So the verses read as follows. Has Doug, is the audio okay?
Yeah, you're coming through fine, Rabbi. Thanks.
Okay, great. Great. All right, so it reads as follows. Better is a child that is poor, that is lacking, but he is wise, than a king who is old, but a fool, and he no longer knows how to guard himself any further. Okay, again, better off is a poor child, but he's wise, in contrast to a king that is old, but is a fool, and he no longer knows how to guard himself any further. I mean, guard himself to live the right life. Okay. That's the first verse. The second verse, you see, now continues with the word because. So he says, because from the house of prison has he exited to become king. And also in his kingship, he was born impoverished. Now, this is a little confusing because it's talking about two people. The first verse, 13, is talking about the child in contrast to the king, who's old. And he's doing the same thing according to the Ibn Ezra in 14. So the way you have to read it is that for from the house of prison, from being in prison, he has exited to become a king. That's talking about the child and the application of his wisdom. For also in his kingdom, meaning now referring back to the old king of the previous verse. So this old king, even in his kingdom, initially he was born poor. Okay, so it's a little bit cryptic. What is he saying over there? The first verse seems a little more intelligible. So we have to always understand when and we mentioned this a number of times, but specifically here, so when King Solomon is writing, or anything in Torah is being written, it's to address us in an area that we would think otherwise. So what would you think otherwise? And because of that, we need to hear this verse number 13, where he tells us that a child really is, even if he's poor, but he's wise, he really surpasses. He is really much more valued than a king. A child is much more valued than a king. Even if the child is poor, but if he's wise, that wisdom outweighs the fact that somebody else might be an old king, but he's a fool, and no longer knows how to guard himself against the wrong ways. Okay, Avner, we're reading in Koheles, chapter 4, verses 13 and 14, Avner, all right? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, Rabbi, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It's, in my humble opinion, to be old and have a lot of material things and be a fool is not something to be envied if you're not wise. I mean, if you're a fool, what's to be envied about being a fool?
Well, that's the question.
You would think that an older person would have a lot of wisdom because he's been around the block a few times and has had experiences, and he should learn from all those experiences enough that he could pass it down to other people, generations.
We have to stay true to the words. He's not talking about passing down to other generations. With the words of the verse.
Well, even for himself.
That's all we're talking
about.
A
fool
right.
is nothing to be envied. I worry about being a fool. I want to have some amount of wisdom so it could help me live better.
Right, but what is he, the question is, what is he addressing in terms of our, what we might have thought? That's what he's talking, because there has to be something to be addressed. There is a misnomer that he is addressing over here. So what is that? What is the misconception that this is now correcting? We understand wisdom outweighs foolishness. That we understand. Yes, Doug?
So it seems like we would have thought in terms of sort of the world that being a king was like the ultimate, because you've got riches and you've got power and all that. And he's specifically contrasting here that to be poor and young is better than old and a king, but he's specifically pointing out the wise part versus the foolish part, I think pointing us in the direction of it doesn't really matter about your power or your riches. What really matters is whether you're wise or foolish.
Right, and one of the commentators, Louis Sforno, is saying that regardless of the fact that the child is young and still has not amassed a lot of knowledge yet, but what he has is the tool. And he says as follows. He says, give me 1 second. Right, so he says that he's poor. He's poor from knowledge, meaning what he has learned up to this certain point, the child is wise, still is limited. Why? Because he has not increased to receive a lot of teachings from his rabbis because of the short amount of time he's been alive. But he is wise. I'm reading this Sforno now, but he is wise, meaning he is one who has ability to analyze, to think, to induce, to deduce, to have critical thinking. And it's proper. And he acquires this through proofs and the discussions with his friends. And like, and in this manner, he will become like a well that is always overflowing, is always gushing forth with new ideas. And he surpasses the king. And why does he surpass the king according to Sforno? Because the king has in his hand the ability, he has bundles and bundles of Mishnah that he learned, and knowledge that he's acquired from the wise people of his generation. And he's also old, because he has seen many actions in life. He has seen many events. And through these, he could have acquired knowledge. But he's foolish. Because although he has seen much, and he has acquired a lot, but he is not a person who uses intelligence. He doesn't analyze. He doesn't think into matters to derive new principles. And therefore, he no longer knows how to guard himself any further. And what does he mean? He means to say that in the manner that he does not know how to reach any more than what is in his hands. So, if you don't have the intelligence to think further and to understand one idea from another by comparing two different concepts and then seeing a third and a fourth emerge from those, so then he's just a person who stagnates. So he says this is much worse, and the child surpasses him. So what happens is that right. So he says further in the next verse that the way Sforno understands the next verse, he says that the, and I say that the child who is impoverished but he's wise, he's better off than this old king. Because he says, let me get to the next page. He doesn't understand all the matters that he has acquired without error, meaning he's full of error. Why? Because he doesn't have the path of proof to guard himself from mistakes in them. So that's the sforno. So when you read verse 14, that he says, because from the house of prison he has gone out to reign. So that is the child. And then the last part, Kigamba Malchuso, but the king, Nolad Rush, he's going to produce. Nolad here means, according to this form, that it's going to produce somebody who's lacking. Meaning, because the king has no acumen, he has no ability to think. He just absorbs and there's no thought applied to it. So because of that, he will end up being impoverished, meaning impoverished in knowledge. Ibn Ezra has an amazingly different approach. And I think it's really beautiful what he says. He says as follows. How does he explain verse 14, that from the house of prison he has gone forth to be king? And also the king was initially born poor. So he says as follows. He says that King Solomon says, do not wonder how this wise person can turn into to have a change, meaning that he can become a poor little child but then become a king. Don't wonder about that. Because also this older king, he was born with nothing. As it says, and I think it's a quote from Job, that naked I went forth from my the womb of my mother. Meaning everybody is initially born with nothing, lacking abilities, but a person can become a king, so you've seen there can be transformation. So he says, do not think that that's impossible. And he's referring here, I think he says he's referring to Joseph, who was in prison and he came out. Let me just go to the beginning. He says even further, so he says that the child who is wise, even he's more fit to be the king than even if he's still in prison. Meaning that state of being in prison is that itself does not have any effect on the value of the fact that he has wisdom. And he says, and this child we're talking about, is, for example, is Joseph, that his wisdom placed him to become a ruler, a viceroy over all of Egypt. But Ibn Ezra, he's sensitive to what King Solomon is saying. And again, he says, but King Solomon says here that you should not wonder how the chacham, how the wise person should have a transition to an opposite state of being first impoverished and in prison. Because really everybody starts out poor. And so that's how you read verse 14. Because he's trying to see, 14 is now substantiating why he says that in verse 13, that the child who's wise is superior to the king. Because what he's addressing is that the person has a certain misconception that look at the status of the person now. Where is he at now? And that's how we'll value it. So that's really what the underlying assumption is that he's trying to address. Because King Solomon understands that people have. And this is where you start digging under the verse, and you start saying, well, what is he addressing, and why do people have this? So first thing he's telling you is that the child who is poor but wise surpasses a king. He tells you that because people think otherwise. No, the fact that somebody's a king, right, despite the fact that he's foolish, but look where he is. Look at his status. Look at his state. Meaning, what do you mean look at his state? This tells you about what a person values. If a person can make this statement, and many, many people do, therefore, you know, King Solomon has to address this, it's because of the underpinning emotion that he's really addressing is that people feel that what's in the here and now, what is current, that is absolute. That there's one word for that, permanence. And this goes a long way, you'll see. But people have a sense of permanence. What they see doesn't change. And that's why King Solomon, according to Ibn Ezra, had to say, no, you see that even the king himself was changed. He became a king and he was born naked and poor like every other child is. But look, he became king, so don't be surprised. If somebody could be a child and poor but wise, and he can end up being successful like Joseph. But he has to say this because there is an underlying feeling that we carry with us, and it's one of these things we don't even detect, but it's there, and it causes us to make many, many decisions. And again, that underlying feeling, which is not based in reality, is called permanence. We have a sense of permanence about many, many things. The primary sense of permanence we have is about our own existence never ending on Earth, the immortality fantasy. So because of that, because we have that, we look at other things as permanent too. Things are fixed. Things won't change. So King Solomon says, no. A wise person, according to Pirkei Avos, says, who is wise? One who sees the results of something. He doesn't assess the value of something in the here and now, because time continues. And with wisdom, if you have that, now you have the tool to progress. So that's something he's trying to tell you, is don't look at the current state. And he talked about this beforehand, or maybe it's after. I'm not sure if we did it together yet in Kohelis, but how a person will amass so much money, and he'll never get a chance to touch it, only to leave it to somebody who's righteous. Or he'll leave it to somebody else. Because since time and elements and these variables in a person's life, so we have no way of really guarding against all the different things that can happen. I know a person personally that just experienced a freeze of his business by the government. He was doing millions, and now there's nothing, and it's causing a divorce. And it's amazing how in just a few months, somebody who could be making the most in his community can be just the opposite. And you just don't see it coming. So, and I'm not saying it's any fault of his. I'm just saying that there's so many variables. And when you see it and you hear about things like this, that wakes you up a little bit. But a lot of people feel that, you know, they are shielded from something like this happening. And people also feel that they're shielded from time marching on, changing, and age. And, you know, other people pass away, other people die, but not me. It's not a reality to most people. It's just something which is, there is a great denial. But the truth is, there is a necessity for a certain amount of that denial, because a person needs to feel a certain amount of permanence if he's going to build a house and get a job and raise a family. There has to be a certain sense that it will be for a certain amount of time, but there has to be a balance. So again, just to review, the verse is addressing the feeling in the person that the state of a person being a king, what could be better than that? What can be better than that? No, the answer is that the King Solomon is telling you that's not true. That's not true at all. Because the wisdom of a child, he will grow with it, and he will eventually even be able to extricate himself from prison. He'll be able to use his wisdom like Joseph did. And that is really how the world operates. If he's using wisdom, then he understands. He'll have political acumen, psychological acumen, and he will know how to manipulate a situation that will be in line with how reality operates. But a person is a fool. Maybe he ended up to be a king like Ahasuerus, right? He used to be the one who swept up the dung in the horse stables. And it was because he married Vashti that he rose to power. But foolishness is going to be the death of the person's greatness. So that's one primary lesson. But the central point that we're making is that there's a feeling of permanence that people have, and they don't think things really have changed, because they are used to seeing the sun come every day, and there is constancy in nature and the world around them. So this now lends them to believe that there is no change, and he will value something based on how it is at the current time. So, but Ibn Ezra wants you to understand that that's why King Solomon wrote verse 14. Because he's trying to show you the application, because really it isn't the best state to be poor. That's why King Solomon says, oh, the poor person who's wise will be able to to get himself out of prison. He'll be able to use his wisdom to do this, because really being in prison is not the best thing. And he proves this to you because, you see, look at the king. He was born with nothing, and now he's a king. So there is transition in life. So you see that that's the method that King Solomon is using. Okay? Let me see my notes 1 second. I mean, the fact is also the person assesses the situation of being in authority, like a king, and wealth, which is also part of the situation of a king. He's wealthy, and he looks at that as being superior. And you see that all the time. The wealthiest people have the great honor. People, why? Because there's an underlying feeling people really want some of that wealth.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Could you also kind of sum it up by saying the wisdom in youth is the openness and the desire to understand and learn, versus as you get old, you get kind of set in your ways and thinking no more than you do?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the last word in verse 13, where it says that he's better off than the young child is wise, is better off than the king who's old and a fool, because he does not know how to guard himself further. What do you mean, further? What happens is exactly what you're saying, is that the behavior becomes fixed in the person at a certain point. There's always free will, of course, but it's much more difficult when a person is ingrained in a certain way. Whereas, your point is very important, that when you have wisdom, so a friend of mine once quoted Rabbi Chait saying that the wise person always changes, meaning he does not say that something is a good now, and always, sometimes it's not going to be good. And we read that almost the entire chapter 3 in Kohelet was about there's a time for peace and there's a time for war, there's a time to dance and there's a time to mourn, meaning that certain attitudes and values don't have a time always. Not certain, but all of them. All attitudes and values have a time and place when they are to be applied. But it's the person who's wise that can assess what should be done now. He's just the opposite. He's not fixed, because he's constantly aware of what's going on, and he's updating himself with new information, which is always happening throughout the day and the month and the year. And based on that, he's going to change. Some people are going to hold on to the gold too long until it drops down to the point that they just can't sell it. A person is wise will take a loss, but he'll still sell his gold when it still has a price to it. So he will change his attitude. At a certain point, you hold on to the gold. At a certain point, you have to sell it. So when you have the wisdom, now you have the tools to constantly grow. That's what Sorno said, that the person like this will be like a well that is constantly gushing forth. The parable is for he's gushing forth with new insight, new ideas. He's able to think, because that's how the world operates. All the information is not in the world. There's a certain fixed amount of physical existences, and there's also a certain fixed amount of verses in the Torah. Now, where is a person going to grow in his wisdom after he examines the entire physical universe, and after he examines all the verses in the Torah? Now, how does he grow in his intelligence? It's because God built both the physical world and the world of ideas in a way where there are ways you could investigate and see nuances and see new ideas. And that's only through wisdom, through analysis. And using that, now a person can cut through the veils and understand more and more and make new discoveries. Because the world of wisdom is endless. And we're just shown the tip of the iceberg. But we're also shown the tools. The Torah trains the mind in a way that the person starts seeing that there's nuances over here. And what does that mean? It leads into a new idea. And those ideas to even more ideas. Tell me if that answers your question. If there's more to your question you want to explore.
No, that's fine.
All right. Now let me just take up a few more points now that we're on this. there's a number of things that we can learn from these two verses, and in terms of our own life and application to ourselves. One of them is, one of them, of course, is what we just mentioned: the force of habit prevents change. That's at the end of 13. That if a king becomes fixed in his ways, so age and habit are going to make it much more difficult to break, old tricks. So that's very important for a person to see, but you can change them. That's equally important. The person has free choice his entire life, and he has to be able to set himself apart from his emotions. This is intelligence, and then the way his emotions feel. A lot of times emotions are very, very satisfying, and that is something which causes a person to gravitate to them and then to have a fixed behavior. But as the rabbis say, you have to weigh the short-lived satisfaction of an emotion against the long-range detriment that it'll have on you. And a very simple example is a person loves to eat things that are fatty. Eventually he's going to have a heart attack, and he's going to clog his arteries, but it tasted great. So a person has to be able to control what is really good for him, but using the intelligence has to guide his actions. And he has to be able to say, I can see that something feels good, but that does not mean that it is good. It has a good sensation, but that does not mean that you follow good sensation. If people follow good sensations, so a person who got bit by a rattlesnake, he won't want to cut his leg open and let somebody suck out the venom, because cutting his leg is going to hurt. But if he doesn't do that, he's going to die. So the momentary pain of having his flesh sliced open is something which he has to bite the bullet if he really wants to have the real good. So that's in terms of force of habit, and also in terms of being able to rise above the desire to satisfy something which is just has a good sensation. Okay. There's also another notion that prevents a person from changing. Why is this king not able to change? Because what his eye on is ego. There is a repulsion against authority, being told. And this could be if a person tells you something. It could be if you read something in the book. But if a person has to have a sense of self where he feels right, and also he finds change difficult. It's two very important things to realize, that change may be difficult, but it could save your life, and it could also have you the happiest life. But a person keeps on repeating his patterns of behavior because change is difficult, so then he's not going to improve his life. And additionally, like we said about authority. So a person has to be like the child who's wise, and he looks at the idea. Is it true or not? It says in the Pirkei Avos again, a person who is a person who's wise, that he learns from every person. That doesn't mean that he's going to learn practically from every person. It means that his ear is open to hearing an idea from any person. He has the ability to learn. His ego is not standing in the way. Because of a certain personality, he is not going to listen to what the person said. No, if a person you hate said something which is valid and you could benefit, you had better, for your own good, apply that truth, regardless of your feeling of hatred to the person. A person has to separate that. Right? So in terms of authority, or not listening to somebody because of certain emotions in the way, that is it's a very important idea. So the fixation on certain poor habits and not growing could be for many, many reasons. Another big problem that we have and causes us not to change is that when we see the masses and societies all following certain paths in life, we tend to feel that they're right. Right? There's truth in numbers, they say. But this again has to be questioned. The wise person, this wise child, or the older person who's wise, will not look at what people do. He will look at the sensibility of the theory or the practice. So that's something also to be conscious of, is not to, even though cultures are built on this misnomer, but as people seeking out intelligence, we have to not respect anything but truth itself. And that's why it's so vital that we're constantly learning, not just in terms of increasing our knowledge of what, you know, God says is true, and these prophets and the wisest men of ever have told this true, but by learning, they all wrote in a way that it sharpens the mind, and it allows us to now think even better the next time around. And we can weigh things more accurately. Okay. And again, we touched on the idea of immortality. That's a primary one. Because the feeling that we aren't leaving this earth causes us to be attached to hedonistic desires and to follow the physical. We're here forever. We've never known anything other. And the person's convinced that that's it. I'm here. It's not going to change. So this sense of immortality does not allow a person to think about, well, what happens next? And maybe the prophets are right. Maybe Moses is right. That all the great rabbis, that we should be preparing for the life which is eternal, because everybody does die, and it's going to happen to everybody. And that is something which a person has to think about and accept. There's nobody's immune to that. And it shouldn't scare a person. It should make a person concerned. Well, that's true, and there could be a life after this. Well, let me see if I can convince myself. Let me see now. And once that becomes a reality, then a person will have a whole different attitude towards this life. He's not going to be looking to absorbing large sums of cash and gaining fame and all, because he realizes he doesn't stay here too long. If a person can realize that it's temporary, this will help him loosen his grip on what is meaningless. Another point, and this is something which, of course, society does not help us out with, is a lack of introspection. Our world does not focus on looking at ourselves and seeing where we have flaws or mistakes. But repentance and tshuva is so vital to our real existence, which happens in the next world. Because if we repent, then God does not hold the sins against us. The person truly repents, and he never returns to it, and it does a really 100% repentance. So he can have a clean slate, and he can have he's increasing what he can have in the next world, and that should really be of a great concern to a person. And just one final note, and then we'll pause, and we'll see if you have any questions or comments, is that going back to the point of ego and not being able to accept change or rebuke because of all the convictions that we have about, well, I must be right, and everybody else is doing it, their mass is doing it, and people who repel authority, they don't really want to change, and they're very satisfied with the emotions that they cater to now, and they also, their habits have trained them a certain way. So all of this, a person should put on one side of the scale, and the other side of the scale, he should ask himself if he would perform an operation on himself. Meaning, a person would admit that he is completely ignorant of the human body, if he's not a doctor, of course, and he would not risk his life because he realizes what great wisdom there is. So use that as an example. Now, if there's such great wisdom in terms of the body, now what about the soul, the part of you that thinks, what all the greatest minds have ever taught us in terms of knowledge of God and what can happen in the next world, and the enjoyment you can really gain from living a life of wisdom. So if you could be ignorant about that, then a person, it's always a great step to get a person to agree in an area that he sees himself, he admits, yes, I am, there is something which I am completely ignorant of. Oh, you agree that you can be ignorant of that? No, and that's something which is physical. And even there, where there's something tangible and you could make measurements and experiments, and still you have tremendous ignorance, so won't you even be more ignorant of that which you can't even see in your soul in the next world? This is where you can even have the greatest amount of ignorance. So using that as a method to make a stepping stone for the person to help them accept that. And it may take, you know, numerous conversations. But You know, the concern should just be not just for us, it's for other people. As a matter of fact, there's a, in Talmud Sanhedrin, 98 or 99a, it says that a person who learns but doesn't teach, so about him, the Torah says, the words of God he despises. All right, so what does it mean, the words of God he despises? If he's not interested in teaching other people knowledge that he's gained, Torah knowledge, so that is, in a way, he is despising the words. He's not sharing them with others. So that's why I say that to you, because, you know, we learn together a lot, and there's other people that you can reach, and I'm sure plenty of you are teaching, and there should be, you know, a concern that when you see ideas and you see them clear and you see the truth behind it, that our concern should cause us to care that another person would also benefit. And, you know, the rabbis say that you should admonish. I mean, it's a Torah command to admonish your fellow person, that you see that they're living a wrong life. You have to speak to them to the point that they're about to hit you. At that point, you don't have to risk bodily harm to yourself. But up to that point, you tell the person. You try to use different arguments. And one argument doesn't work, use another one. Don't repeat the same thing over and over again. Try to see how you can penetrate the person based on their personality, what they really value. That's usually a great starting point. See what the person really values, and then work from there. So a person really will admit, yeah, you know, doctors are amazingly smart. I know nothing about the body. Oh, great. So wouldn't you admit that if you could be ignorant in that area, that this can also apply to an area that is even less evidence to work with? Freud was about to give a class once, and he, as an introduction to his class, he anticipated the criticism that he was going to get talking about something called psychology. Yeah, so he said to the class in front of him that, I understand that if I were a surgeon, I would be able to show you a cadaver, and I'd be able to show you the different organs and how they relate to each other, and how harm is brought this way, and health can be brought that way, because there'd be something tangible for me to show you. But here I am to embark upon a lesson about something which is completely intangible, meaning the human psyche and how the emotions work. And I have, so he realized that it's an abstract area. It's not something that you can point to. So we realize that as well, but it makes it no less real. So we have to be aware of that as we, you know, as we approach that area. But that's a good tool to show to a person, that if they could be ignorant of matters of the physical body, they could certainly be ignorant of things that have no physicality to them. I mean, the areas of the soul and perfection, and what really gives you happiness, and what removes conflict in your life, and what can really give you success. You could be a child that's poor but wise, and you will have a much better life than a person who may be a king now but is a fool. Because that wisdom you have as a child, or at any point in life, is eventually going to help you, and it will help you even get yourself out of prison to become king. Look what Joseph did. Okay, let me pause here, see if there's any questions, comments.
Makes sense.
Right, you see, just from a few verses, I mean, the real wisdom I see here in this is that when he talks and he says in verse 13 that who is he addressing? He's addressing a person who thinks otherwise. That's why King Solomon is talking. Because we think otherwise. No, but why do we think otherwise? Why would we value the king over the child who's wise? Because we are valuing the current state that he's in, the position. We're not looking down the road, as Pirkei Avos teaches us. Who is a wise person? A person who sees the results of matters. So a person who's wise, he'll understand that wisdom can create a great transition in life. So there's two things. There's two mistakes that King Solomon is addressing. A person, number one, looks at the here and now because of permanence. But that very permanence is what he then shows, no, there can be change. Those are the primary lessons here in these two verses. That's why he says that this child can emancipate himself. He can get out. He can escape prison and even become a king. He can go from the lowest to the highest with wisdom. He's trying to show you that don't look at things as being permanent. And like Cal, you mentioned it, but look at the tool. Look at wisdom. If you got wisdom, now you've got a great tool. And that's how the world works with wisdom. That's how God designed the whole universe. So if you work with it, then you will be able to have a good coexistence and a successful coexistence in the world. But this feeling of looking at the current state, oh, he's a king, that definitely surpasses a child. No. Because there is this thing called transition. Things aren't transitory. So that should uproot the person's feeling of permanence. Yes, things may be a certain way today, but let's see what happens tomorrow. Even when it says that a person should align himself with a person who's successful, because the hour is, the sun is shining, and the hour is good to him. But they still say the hour is good, meaning the moment that he's in right now, he's successful, good. Team up with him now. But don't look at it as being something which is eternal. You don't know all the variables. Things change all the time. So that's the primary lesson here today, is that do not look at the current state and accept that there is no permanence. There is only one thing which is consistent, and that is that wisdom is always something which is good. Because that's the nature of the operation of the world. That's not an event. See, events are what we're addressing are not permanent. There's change in events, but there is no change in the value of wisdom. And that's really, that could have been a good question. Somebody would ask, well, if he's telling you that don't value the king because he could end up to the point where he can't guard himself any further and then he destroys himself, well, if that could change, why can't wisdom change? Right, that could be a good question. But wisdom is not an event. Wisdom is how the world operates. There's a design to it, and that does not change. So that's why wisdom is something which is always a good. Whereas the state that the person is in, that's just due to certain events, and those change. Okay. But you see that in terms of application, that there are many areas that we have to reflect on. Recognizing that we have, doing things out of force of habit doesn't necessarily mean those habits are good. And just because emotions may be satisfying, that does not dictate that we should continue following them. Just because something has a good satisfaction in terms of our senses, that is not how you evaluate whether it's really a good for you, for your soul. To think about rejecting teachings because somebody told you or authority is repulsive to you, no. If something makes sense, you follow it. It doesn't matter who said it. And don't be led astray by the masses that because so many people do something, therefore it must be true. No. That is no barometer of the truth. And of course, we have to keep focus on the fact that we have an immortality fantasy. And God made us that way with a certain sense of being here for a while, but we have to realize that it is temporary, and we should be open and convinced to the fact that life is short and there is a next life. Everybody dies. And that being the case, we should be following the words of the rabbis that we look at this as just this world is just a corridor to the big banquet hall. The big banquet hall means the eternal life of the soul. So we should be investing our time here, not in building and amassing things that we can't take with us to the grave, but we should be investing in the perfection of our soul and repentance and perfecting our thoughts and making sure that we really attach. And you will see that this life here will be even better than any other life we could have thought of, because with learning comes an enjoyment, because the soul is the center part of the person. And if the center part of the person is ignored, you can't be happy no matter what else you try to do. But when the essential component of man is intelligence, is engaged in thought and learning, then he gets a satisfaction more than anything else, more than riches and honor. So we have to, that leads us to focusing on introspection and evaluating ourselves. And we should do it daily. Is it something I've done which is really, I'm just doing it out of habit that I really haven't questioned? And that's why it's important to constantly be learning Torah, because then we have new information that can teach us a new point that we didn't know yesterday. And there is so much to learn, just like we we would never do surgery on ourselves because we realize the intricacies of the human body. So we should certainly apply that lesson to our soul. The intricacies there, we can't even see with the eye. So it's much more abstract. So when it comes to that, we should definitely heed the lesson of the rabbis and God's verses in the Torah. They're all very, very important lessons. Okay, any questions or comments?
I think we're good here.
Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi. It clarifies so much. Makes a lot of sense.
Okay, thank you. All right, so think it over, and it's important. And you just see how, you know, from looking at the verses, what was he addressing? Who was he addressing? What notions is King Solomon addressing in the verse? And that's where it starts opening up. And we see why one verse follows the other. Because he gives you an example of his point. All right, then. So I guess we'll wrap it up here. We will pick up next week, same time. All right, 11:15 Sunday Eastern Time. And until then, I wish everybody a very, very good week.
And you too, Rabbi. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for your time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Be well, everybody. Bye-bye.